Our study tonight is out of Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32, among other passages, the biblically consistent righteousness of Christ's subjects regarding divorce. When Jesus said that one's righteousness had to exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees if he were to be a part of the kingdom of heaven in Matthew 5:20, he needed to clarify to his Hebrew listeners how that could possibly be. For the Pharisees adhered to the principle of hakha, concern for every jot and tittle of performance regarding the Mosaic law. Well, Matthew 5, 21 to 7, verse 6 provides many illustrations of Jesus' point, and Matthew 5, 31 and 32 comments on how his kingdom righteousness regarding divorce far surpassed the righteousness of the Pharisees as follows. Now, it's interesting, you might be wondering, why is Jesus talking about divorce here? Well, you'll notice that he started in verse 27 talking about the sin of adultery, thou shalt not commit adultery. He's still talking about the theme of adultery because you'll notice at the end of verse 32 it says, whoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. So he's still dealing with the issue of adultery. And Jesus has almost a revolutionary view of what constitutes adultery compared to what people today have. So it's very good for us to understand what's he talking about. Well, the rabbis of Jesus' day were divided into two schools of thought on divorce. Rabbi Shammai held that a man could not divorce his wife unless he found her guilty of sexual immorality. But followers of Rabbi Hillel, who was much more liberal, allowed divorce for many, including trivial reasons. If a woman burned a roast, a man could get a divorce under Rabbi Hillel. If a man suddenly didn't like her, wanted a younger woman, something, you know, it's like trading in an old car for a new model kind of a thing, Rabbi Hillel could divorce. So there was this huge division in Judaism over the grounds of divorce. However, divorce undermines the very sanctity of the home that the prohibition of adultery in the seventh of the Ten Commandments meant to protect. You'll remember last week we discussed this, how that Jesus was opposed to adultery because adultery undermined the sanctity of the home. If you have partners that are not faithful to one another and they go off with another partner, it breaks up the continuity of the home and it does tremendous damage. It does tremendous damage to the children, does tremendous damage to the society as a whole. But divorce also undermines the sanctity of the home because you're having a breakup of the family unit. And that is just as destructive. Sometimes it's almost more destructive. So Jesus clarified how any divorce is itself a form of adultery that is forbidden in his messianic kingdom. And he does this in Matthew chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. Let me read the verses and then we'll look at them. Matthew 5, beginning at verse 31. And it has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a bill or a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, except for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. And whosoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. Well, continuing his address on the sin of adultery begun back in Matthew 5, 27, Jesus added in Matthew 5, 31, especially in the New International Version, that the Jews of his day taught that anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. Now, this belief held that Moses called for divorce in Deuteronomy chapter 24, 1 to 4. I'm going to look at that passage because it's extremely important on this whole issue of divorce in Jesus' day. I'm going to read it the way the rabbis in Jesus' day were interpreting it. In fact, they interpreted it the way the King James writes it. The King James says in Deuteronomy chapter 24, beginning at verse 1, when a man has taken a wife and married her, and it comes to pass that she find no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, then, the then clause you notice is right there in verse 1, then let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorcement, and gives it in her hand and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband die, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. After that, she is defiled. Now, that's what the King James reads. I want to translate it the way the Hebrew Bible translates it, and incidentally, the New International Version translates it this way too. When a man has taken a wife and married her, and it comes to pass that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a bill of divorce, and gives it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, and when she has departed out of his house, and she goes and becomes another man's wife, and if the latter husband hates her and writes her a bill of divorcement and gives it into her hand and sends her out of his house, if the latter husband die, which took her as his wife, then her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife after that she is defiled. And if you put the then clause down in verse 4 instead of verse 1, it has a completely different meaning. If it's in verse 4, which the Hebrew text has it, Moses was not commanding divorce. He was saying, if there is a marriage and there's a divorce, and then these people go off and marry other couples, and then they get divorced, under no conditions can the original couples come back. That's all Moses. All Moses was doing was beginning to put the skids on divorce. Divorce was rampant in the ancient pagan world, especially in Egypt. It was also rampant. The Jewish people had picked it up in Moses' era, and they were practicing it all over the place. So he was beginning to put the skids on it. You go from that all the way to Jesus and eventually down to elders in the local church, where divorce is absolutely out of the question to be an elder. He has to be the husband of but one wife, period. And that's where we have developed in our day. In fact, in the early days here in the state of Connecticut, divorce and remarriage was absolutely forbidden. Of course, that's been changed dramatically. In fact, adultery has been taken off the books as a crime. It was a crime until, I think, a couple years ago in Connecticut, and then they finally took it off the books. But anyway, that reflected the old Puritan stands that we used to have. So, the Jews of Jesus' day taught that anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. However, Moses did not there command divorce. The then clause does not begin in Deuteronomy 24:1 with the then let him write her bill of divorcement, as in the King James, but in Deuteronomy 24:4 with then let her first husband who divorced her not marry her again. Now, Moses only tolerated divorce due to Israel's hardness of heart, but he commanded that if a man divorced his second wife, he could not rewed his first one. Now, divorce undermined the sanctity of the home that the Ten Commandments' prohibition of adultery countered. So Jesus said that he who divorced his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, caused her to commit adultery, and that whoever married her that was divorced committed adultery. Now, this exception clause cannot mean except for sexual immorality in a general sense, for that sin was punished by death, which punishment would eradicate the need for a divorce. In Deuteronomy 22:22, if a man and a woman were cohabitating together and one of them was married, then both of them had to be stoned. So, you know, you don't get a divorce for someone who's committed immorality. There's execution, so there's no need for divorce at that point. And once the execution occurs, since you have the death of a spouse, then the person is free to remarry. So the except for fornication clause cannot mean immorality as you and I view immorality in a general sense. In addition, Mark's gospel reads completely differently. And let me get that out. Mark chapter 10, verses 11 and 12 reads this way. And Jesus said unto them, whosoever shall put away his wife and marry another commits adultery against her. There's no except for fornication clause there. And if a woman shall put away her husband and be married to another, she commits adultery, period. There's no except for fornication clause. Now, this has created a tremendous division amongst evangelicals. You go to a lot of evangelicals today, and you'll have some churches that permit divorce. You'll have some churches that don't. And the churches that don't will quote Mark's gospel. The churches that do will quote Matthew's gospel. Well, I don't believe in putting Mark versus Matthew, because if you do, then you're admitting that there's a discrepancy in Jesus' words. And if there's a discrepancy, we don't have an inerrant Bible. Somehow they've got to make sense together. So we can harmonize them. Understanding the readership of these books removes the discrepancy and clarifies Jesus' idea. Matthew was written for the Jew and Mark for the Gentile. Accordingly, the Jew defined three circumstances as fornication, quote, end of quote, and bases for divorce that were unique to the Jew. First of all, marriage between a Jew and a Gentile required a divorce to keep Israel's biblical lineage pure. You'll remember Ezra chapter 10, verses 9 through 11, where the Jews had married Canaanites upon returning to the land after the Babylonian captivity. And Ezra said, you're going to pollute the line, and we're not going to have the nation Israel like God wants, so put away your foreign wives. So they had to put them away. They had to divorce these foreign wives and send their children back, or, you know, provide them for their wives' father's homes and so forth. That's what would happen. Now, that doesn't apply to us today, of course, because none of us today are under a command from God to keep our lineage within, let's say, Norwegians marrying only Norwegians, or English marrying only English, and so forth. We don't have that command. We're not under the law. Then the second cause that was called fornication was marriage between close relatives in violation of the Mosaic law. For example, you couldn't marry your cousin or your aunt or your uncle and so forth. And this was called the Levitical degrees. Well, today that doesn't apply to us because the law doesn't permit you to enter into a marital union with someone that you're a relative to. This is why you get a marriage license. And it's checked out to see if, you know, you qualify, can qualify or not. I was in a unique situation. My father was adopted. So I actually could have married one of my cousins. I never would have thought of doing that, but I'm not of the same bloodline. But that would have created an awkward situation for the family. Well, thankfully, that never developed. You know, the Lord never went in that direction. Then the third case was immorality during a betrothal period in violation of Jewish customs. Remember when in Matthew 1, 18 and 20, when Mary was with child while Joseph and Mary were engaged, Joseph was minded to write a bill of divorce. Because under Jewish custom, when an arrangement was made for marriage, the man paid the dowry to the bride's father. So technically, she was already his wife, even though they had not come together. But if during that period between the betrothal arrangement and when they had come together, the woman became pregnant out of wedlock and so forth, that was a violation of the marital contract, and that was grounds for the breaking of the engagement. But to break an engagement, you had to break the dowry, the betrothal, and so forth, and that required a bill of divorce. Well, today you can break an engagement and you don't get a bill of divorce because you have a bill of divorce only if you're actually fully married in our culture. So that doesn't apply to us either. So none of these circumstances apply to Gentiles. No Gentile is under a divine order to marry within a particular people group. Secular laws and not the Mosaic law govern who a Gentile can even qualify to wed in regards to his relatives. And a Gentile betrothal can be broken without divorce proceedings in contrast to Jewish customs. So Mark had no exception clause, where Matthew's gospel to the Jew needed to have the clause to meet the standards of the Jews. See, even speaking with Jews, if Jesus had not put the except for fornication clause, the Jews would have come back and said, well, you're unbiblical because you're saying Ezra was wrong. And Jesus wasn't about to do that because they were supposed to keep the Jewish line pure. So Jesus put the exception clause in for the Jew. Mark left it out because Mark knew, especially when Mark was writing to Romans, where Romans had lots and lots of divorce, he wasn't going to open up a can of worms by using the except for fornication clause because then the Romans would jump all over that and get divorced. So he didn't want to do that. So these Jewish standards are not applicable for us. So we ignore the exception clause, and Jesus, like Paul, unconditionally forbids divorce in order to guard the sanctity of the home. This is why Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 10, do not let a believer put away their unbelieving spouse. But if they do divorce, let them either remain unmarried or be reunited. And this is why we hold that marriage is something that is sanctified before God, even if the spouse is not saved. Once you're in a marriage contract, that is something that is holy before God. In fact, the Bible there actually says the unsaved spouse is actually sanctified to a degree by the believing spouse. All it does is devastate the home. Divorce, I have never seen where divorce causes anybody to win. The husband loses, the wife loses, the lawyers lose. The children lose. Everybody loses in a divorce. Everybody gets hurt. I've had so many absolutely heart-wrenching counseling sessions because of the issue of divorce. I try to encourage people, no matter what, if you have to live separately to avoid killing one another, fine. But don't get divorced. Don't get divorced. So the lesson application is, may we not commit adultery, nor the thought, nor any act leading up to the act itself. That was last week's lesson. And may we not practice divorce or divorce and remarriage to protect the sanctity of the home. Divorce and or divorce and remarriage is also adultery. If you come along and you have never married, but you marry someone who is divorced, you actually commit adultery. Because in God's mind, that person is still technically married to the other partner. Now, if a person has been divorced and the partner dies, some pastors feel that they can remarry because there's been a divorce that's broken up. Other pastors, and I hand it to them, they still say, no, we won't let you do that because you got the divorce. I don't know where I stand on that. Thankfully, I haven't had to face it. My feeling is probably the wisest thing would be to remain unmarried because that doesn't complicate the issue. Divorce is so destructive to society, so destructive, incredibly destructive to the children, the extended family, that I do everything I can to encourage people to stay married and not to get divorced.